Good afternoon. I'm calling this meeting of the House Finance and Policy Committee to order. And before we begin our business, I would like to read just some table setting with our sergeant's office and for the folks in attendance about how we plan to conduct our business this session and all our committees. Welcome to the Minnesota House of Representatives. We appreciate your interest and participation in the legislative process. And to ensure everyone can view, hear, and understand today's proceedings, we ask for your cooperation in maintaining decorum and civility through this hearing. For the safety, security, and comfort of all attendees, please note the following guidelines. I, the committee chair, maintain control of these proceedings and establish the following expectations. Signs and placards are not permitted in the hearing room. Verbal outbursts, shouting, or disruptive behavior will not be tolerated. Applause or other audible demonstrations are not allowed. For safety reasons, standing or sitting in walkways and aisles or standing or obstructing at your chair is prohibited. If you require any accommodations, please speak with our sergeant staff. Those are folks identified with their gold ties. Troopers and house security personnel are present to ensure everyone's safety. Those providing testimony will be given specific time limits. If you receive an entrance ticket, please retain it as it may be required for re-entry. And failure to comply with these guidelines may result in the removal from the hearing room. Our goal is to conduct these proceedings efficiently while ensuring everyone has the opportunity to observe and participate appropriately. That's pretty much how we've conducted things here in the Housing Committee, and I do really love to see this full committee hearing and democracy in action here today in our first hearing. And I would note that we have a quorum present. And the first thing I'd like to do before we really get into new business would recognize that we have a new member in our Housing Committee, and it's Representative Shelley Buck. And I wonder if Representative Buck would just want to introduce herself to the committee.
Hello, my relatives. I greet you with a good heart and handshake. My name's Shelley Buck. I am representative for 47A, which is South Maplewood and Woodbury. I am filling the seat that Amanda Hemmingson-Yeager held. So, Padami Ayapi, thank you for having me.
We're glad to have you aboard. Next order of business, I'll move to approval of the minutes. Way back on Wednesday, April 9th, 2025, I'm quite certain every member of this committee knows that every detail by heart that occurred, but would anyone care to make the motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Co-Chair Igo moves the minutes. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye. Aye. Opposed? The minutes are approved. Members, we have three bills on the committee hearing today, and we have lots of folks signed up to testify. Would remind folks that are testifying, we are going to have to stick to a pretty strict two-minute limit for testimony. If you hear a buzz go off, a little ding, that will be my CA, Benji Brinks, giving a little warning to finish that kind of last sentence or thought. That way we can make sure that we hear from folks and get through these three bills today on the agenda. And the first bill we have is House File Number 3403, with Vice Chair Representative Kozlowski being the author. Representative Kozlowski, I understand the plan is to have a vote on this bill and to refer it to the Committee on Ways and Means. Would you like to make that motion and move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Howard. I do move to move House File 3403 and be referred to Ways and Means.
It's properly before the committee. And Vice Chair Kozlowski, I understand you have the A1 amendment. Could you briefly describe the A1 amendment that gets the bill in the shape you desire?
Yes, thank you, Chairs Igo and Howard. The A1 author's amendment for this bill is just incorporating some technical language and implementation changes that were recommended by the Department of Revenue, allowing for a small portion of the funds to be used by the counties and tribes for administrative costs. It also clarifies slightly the timing mechanisms and then reporting structures for spent and unspent funds. And so with that, I move the A1 amendment.
Is there any discussion to the A1? If not, all those in favor of the A1, say aye. Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. Vice Chair Kozlowski, to your bill as amended.
Great. Thank you, Chair Howard, Chair Igo, and members. Welcome back to the first session of our Housing Committee. I really want to bring us back and bring us home to the work that we've already been doing together, stripped away from talking points and headlines and party labels, as we've done very successfully here over our tenure together. But we already know what we're facing in Minnesota, and that is a housing crisis. HF 3403 builds on our committee's work with matching solutions to the scale of the problems that Minnesotans are facing. We know the 2025 state of housing report shows nearly half of all Minnesota renters are cost burdened, especially at the lowest income ranges. Evictions are up 50% over pre-pandemic averages. Last year, more than 25,000 evictions were filed alone. And we know that in January, the number one call to the home line statewide tenant landlord hotline was for rental assistance. That is families and workers on brink in every single one of our districts and counties in the state. At the same time, Minnesota has spent the last 12 weeks enduring a federal occupation, as we've referred it to as being under siege by Operation Metro Surge. That's really left our communities rocked with widespread economic and housing destabilization. That looks like families who are afraid to leave their homes, parents afraid to send their kids to schools, workers afraid to go to their jobs, and workplaces that are struggling with keeping up with foot traffic and reporting sales down 50 to 100% and shuttered. Landlords facing uncertainty when tenants disappear and are getting behind on their rent. And as paychecks disappear overnight, rent is still due. This is not abstract. It is economic disruption. And as we know, the first place that comes knocking is in our homes. Behind every statistic is a Minnesotan making impossible, grueling choices between groceries and rent, medicine and rent, children and rent, between safety and rent. A Minnesota housing analysis estimates that it would take roughly $350 million annually to meet the already needs of emergency rental assistance statewide. And so with this bill, while it is not an entire solution, it is a really important, immediate stabilizing tool that we can act now to prevent more dominoes from falling and help us stave off these evictions on the horizon. Looking around at this room, and as we'll hear from many testifiers, Minnesotans are already stepping up. They are taking a play out of the COVID-era playbooks and running Adopt-a-Rent. One group of educators I talked to raised over $200,000 supporting 86 families to make rent for February 1st. That is daunting in a system that's not working for the people who are having to go into debt, maxing out credit cards to front rent for their neighbors. We cannot GoFundMe our way out of this structural housing crisis. It can buy us time, but Minnesotans are telling us loud and clear that it's time for the state to step up into this crisis, and it is exactly what we do. We've done it time and time again in bipartisan fashion. When natural disasters hit, pandemic strike, or an economic disaster brings a downturn like a massive mine layoff, we step up. This is a cost-effective, urgent action that we can take to really make sure that we're not having multiplying harmful impacts onto our community members. So what this bill does is it directs $50 million through counties and tribal nations through the Department of Revenue. We move resources quickly, locally, and responsibly, as I mentioned, to make sure that more dominoes don't fall. So out of the $50 million, $44 million will go directly to the counties, and $6 million of that would be reserved for the tribal nations. Again, distributed by the Department of Revenue using our already existing and supported in bipartisan fashion, local homeless prevention aid formula. These dollars in rental assistance would be administered by programs using their own staff through local housing or community development agencies, or by contracting with trusted FHPAP providers in all 87 counties. It is geared towards targeting folks at 200% below the federal poverty level who are homeless, experiencing and imminently at risk of homelessness. I'll note that unlike other forms of assistance, such as SNAP or general assistance, these funds would not be paid directly to recipients, but would go directly to landlords who are really struggling as well. Again, this is a targeted response, not new bureaucracy. These are tools that we already have for responsible ways and time-limited actions to stave off eviction. So I'll just say this, we know an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, that emergency assistance is an investment in stabilization. These are things that we've done here with Bring It Home, with LAHA SAHA dollars being able to be used for rental assistance for FHPAP, like we passed last session together. Housing is the backbone of our economy, and I will turn it over to our testifiers to talk more about the weight of the impact and what this is looking like in their neighborhoods and in their lives.
Thank you, Representative. First up, we have Stephanie L. Lewis, Associate Vice President, Advocacy and Community Impact with Greater Twin Cities United Way. And on deck, we have Commissioner Annie Harala. Welcome to the committee.
Welcome. Can you hear me? All right. Chair Howard and the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee. As you mentioned, my name is Stephanie L. Lewis, and I'm the Associate Vice President, Advocacy and Community Impact at Greater Twin Cities United Way. I am writing in strong support of the proposal to invest an additional $50 million in emergency rental assistance for families impacted by ongoing federal actions. Since early January, our 211 resource helpline has seen a dramatic spike in rental assistance requests. During the week of January 12th, we recorded 3,211 requests for rental assistance, a 238% increase over our quarter four baseline last year. Nonprofits, our first line of defense, have adjusted their strategies to meet the moment. One partner shared that they are using United Way's community response dollars and resources from another funder not only to cover past due rent, but to also provide 1 to 2 months of future rent so that families have a realistic chance at stability instead of living month to month in a constant state of unpredictability. Despite the creativity of nonprofits and the generosity of funders and community members, philanthropic and mutual aid dollars alone cannot keep up with the scale of the demand. They are noble stopgaps, not long-term solutions. State emergency rental assistance can change this. By providing immediate, dedicated state dollars, the legislature can directly stabilize families whose income has been disrupted by federal activity. This investment will also free up private mutual aid so they can support families who do not qualify for public assistance but are still in crisis, expanding the total safety net rather than stretching it thinner. In short, these dollars will keep families housed, prevent new entries into the emergency shelter system, and ensure nonprofits can continue meeting escalating demand without exhausting limited resources. Without this intervention, we will continue to see families offered a single month of relief, followed by months of unpredictability. We will see more children forced to change schools due to housing loss, more families cycling through shelters, and more adults living with the impossible choice of paying rent or covering basic needs like food and medicine. Our communities have shown remarkable compassion in responding to this crisis. But philanthropy and mutual aid were never designed to shoulder this burden alone. Housing stability is fundamentally a matter of public policy and public responsibility. For these reasons, I urge you to support HF 3403.
Thank you. Next, we have testifying virtually Commissioner Annie Harala from St. Louis County. And if you could state your name for the record and give us your testimony. We'll see if we can make this work.
Yes, thank you.
We can hear you. Wonderful.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon. My name is Annie Harala. I'm the first district commissioner in St. Louis County. And thank you to Chairs Igo and Howard and Vice Chair Kozlowski for bringing this forward. And well, hello to other distinguished committee members and staff. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today to you. I represent the heart of Duluth within St. Louis County. But I was born in Duluth, but spent most of my life north and south, so spent much time in both our rural and urban parts of our region. And we have an incredibly diverse area. And along with St. Louis County, is really struggling with housing supports, and we need this support right now. I've seen again and again that when people fall on hard times, neighbors do step up for neighbors, but today the need is growing much faster than any of our local communities can carry alone. In St. Louis County, for example, our emergency assistance funds run out in early March. With no new allocation in July, that leaves a four-month stretch where families facing eviction, job disruptions, or crisis will have nowhere to turn. And we're also seeing our nonprofits lose additional dollars, so it's not like they can go to them to get that additional help. There's simply nowhere else to turn. Our main prevention tool at the county is FHPAP funding, and it's been also been cut dramatically. Over the last two-year cycle, our county received $2.47 million, and in the current two-year cycle, that dropped to just over $800,000. And our need continues to grow every day. And unfortunately, we can't absorb this gap locally. Counties are facing compounding pressures from federal and state cuts, paired with increasing requirements and cost shifts onto us. We cannot continue to pass these costs onto our property taxpayers who are already seeing rising housing costs. Simply put, the county can't do this alone. Our communities can't do this alone. We really need the state support to help here. And we see those consequences every day. For example, this winter, we have more than 600 people, individuals, that have stayed in our warming shelter, and hundreds more in our region, north and south, that are turned away from our shelter beds every single day. So HF 3403 gives communities a way to respond now, using systems that are already in place to keep people housed before we have an even higher crisis in homelessness. Housing stability is the foundation that everything stands on. And right now, this bill is how we can keep that foundation strong for thousands of Minnesotans while we continue to recover from this crisis. Thank you so much and appreciate your consideration and support of this bill.
Thank you. Next, we have Commissioner Angela Connolly from Hennepin County. And on deck, we have Juan Luis Rivera Reyes. Commissioner, welcome. If you could state your name and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Chair Howard and members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Angela Connolly, and I am Hennepin County Commissioner. First, I would like to thank Rep. Kozlowski for authoring this important legislation. Hennepin County supports HF 3403 that would provide critical funding to counties and tribal governments to provide timely rent assistance to residents facing eviction. Hennepin County is committed to preventing evictions for residents, all residents, in an equitable and efficient manner. In our community, and statewide, frankly, the vast majority of evictions are due to non-payment of rent, stemming often from temporary interruption of household income, the household's budget. With that in mind, one of our most effective avenues for preventing evictions is emergency rental assistance. Through Hennepin's coordinated emergency rent system, Rent Help Hennepin, we have prevented more than 9,000 evictions already, and that's since 2023. Rent Help Hennepin integrates county access points with more than 15 community-based agencies providing access to rent assistance and support services for residents who are facing eviction. The Rent Help Hennepin network includes several culturally specific providers engaging cultural communities facing the greatest housing disparities. In addition to our commitment to emergency rent assistance, Hennepin provides no-cost legal representation for any low-income household that is facing eviction through our adult representation services area. Particularly when paired with emergency rent assistance, this legal representation embedded at housing court facilitates thousands of settlements every year. For the current calendar year, Hennepin County has allocated $9.6 million towards emergency rent assistance, but it's not enough. Families and individuals throughout Minnesota are facing challenging economic circumstances. With costs and rents and utilities continuing to rise, Minnesotans in the healthcare, retail, restaurant, and service industries are particularly at risk for eviction. In Hennepin County alone, 10,000 households experienced an eviction filing in 2025, just last year. That's an all-time high for us. Further, these pre-existing economic conditions have worsened over the past month with the heightened presence of federal immigration authorities. And it's reasonable to assume that our eviction crisis will worsen across the state in the coming weeks and months. We know for certain that the most effective and timely avenue for keeping residents housed during these challenges is to deploy emergency rent assistance at a scale that is adequate to the need. I look forward to you all supporting this bill today. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, Juan Luis Rivera Reyes, a member of Equity in Place. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, members of the House Housing Finance Policy Committee. My name is Juan Luis Rivera Reyes. I'm a coalition organizer with the Alliance for Metropolitan Stability and a member of the Equity in Place Coalition. We are advocating for the immediate passage of House File 3404, or 3403, establishing a one-time emergency rental assistance aid for counties and tribal governments to keep families in their homes, help us prevent the tsunami of evictions of their most vulnerable residents who will be left with no place to go. I personally have been involved with local efforts to coordinate assistance for our impacted neighbors. The need for rental, food, and utility assistance are astronomical and only continue to compound on one another. This is a need that cannot be met solely by community fundraising efforts or even by the state's philanthropic institutions. We need our state government to step up and address the current needs. Without adequate emergency rental assistance, we will see our hardworking neighbors, dedicated individuals, and families face the realities of being evicted due to them losing out on millions of dollars of wages and business revenues through these last few months. This is not only a housing issue, it is an economic and psychological attack on our immigrant BIPOC communities. The proposed establishment of a one-time emergency rental assistance aid for counties and tribal governments would allow our neighbors who are not connected or whose systems could not continue to sustain the ability to shelter in place and to prevent until this occupation ends, and to prevent the violence, family separation, displacement, increased homelessness that we're seeing on our streets today. Please allow us to continue to maintain the stability for all Minnesota residents. I urge you to act and to protect Minnesota renters today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, testifying virtually is Kaylee Nicole, a resident from Carlton County.
Thank you, Chairs Howard, Igo, and members of the committee. My name is Kaylee Spencer. I'm a Carlton County resident, the executive director of a nonprofit child care center, and I'm here in support of HF 3403. As a single provider in my field, I cannot afford the basics. Healthcare, stable housing, and savings are out of reach. Childcare operates on razor-thin margins, and so do those of us who dedicate our lives to this work. I want to speak today not just as a provider, but as someone who has experienced housing instability firsthand. When two loved ones who had been helping support me passed away unexpectedly, the bills began to pile up, and I fell behind. I continued paying rent, though sometimes late. Late fees then piled up and set me further back. Close to the end of my lease, my rental company retracted the renewal offer they had previously sent. After 6 years in my home, I suddenly had no plan for where to go next. Coming up with a security deposit and moving costs during a time of instability when you are already living paycheck to paycheck is impossible. It deepens the instability. Without short-term support, a temporary setback can quickly turn into a long-term housing crisis. Thankfully, a fellow provider had a place for me to stay while I worked to get back on my feet. Without this support, I would have had to leave my career and start over entirely. If housing instability can affect someone working full-time and leading an organization, imagine the impact on those with even fewer resources, with no support network, or those who are afraid to leave their homes right now. HF 3403 gives counties and tribal nations the ability to intervene during this fragile moment, before instability becomes eviction, job loss, or a deeper crisis. Emergency rental assistance is about stabilization. It is about preventing an emergency from becoming something much harder and more expensive to solve later. I urge you to support HF 3403. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Councilmember Irene Chowdhury of Minneapolis Ward 12. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Igo and Chair Howard and members of the committee, and thank you, Representative, for bringing forward this urgent bill. My name is Irene Chowdhury. I serve on the Minneapolis City Council representing the 12th Ward, and I just want to speak plainly. The federal actions has had a devastating economic impact on our city and communities across Minnesota. We're not talking about short-term disruption. We're preparing for years of recovery. Internally, we're having sobering conversations about the impacts that could last at least a generation. In Minneapolis alone, we estimate about $15 million in rental assistance needs just for the month of January, and $71 million in wages lost. This doesn't include February, and we're already hearing from residents about falling behind for the month of March. The broader financial impact on our city is conservatively estimated at $203 million, and that's just for December and January. These numbers reflect real people whose incomes were disrupted, workers who lost hours, businesses that have shuttered, families who have suddenly found themselves without a paycheck they depend on. Every day, I get phone calls from different residents who are struggling to stay housed. The restaurant worker who welcomed customers every day, now without work. The mother who has two kids but can't piece together rent. And the young woman who is an expectant mother but now is facing an uncertain future because she doesn't have the income she once relied on. Housing stability is the foundation of our recovery. When families stay housed, children stay in school, parents can return to work, property owners can meet their obligations and pay their mortgages. Preventing evictions now avoids far greater costs into the future. And on the Minneapolis City Council, we recently approved $1 million in emergency rental assistance to be administered by Hennepin County. And we are so proud to do our part. But however, as many of you know, especially those who have served on city councils or have been mayors, we have a job to do to balance our budget and remain fiscally responsible. And what is clear is the scale of the need that we're seeing in the city of Minneapolis far outweighs what we can absorb as a single city. And that is the case for several other cities in the state of Minnesota. So I'm really humbly asking you for your support. If we can't recover as a city of Minneapolis, it'll have wide-ranging impacts throughout our state and the state budget. Just plainly, the cost of inaction is evictions, displacement, and long-term instability. Our benefit in this action is stability, recovery, and stronger communities for the future. So on behalf of the city of Minneapolis, I strongly urge you to support HF 3403, and thank you so much for your time and your leadership in this moment.
Thank you. Next, we have Beth Winterfeld, president of the Social Workers Association, who will be testifying virtually.
Good afternoon. Thank you to the committee chairs and members for listening. My name is Beth Winterfeld, and I am here on behalf of the Minnesota chapter of the National Association of Social Workers, also as a licensed school social worker serving eight districts here in South Central Minnesota. I live here in St. Peter, and as a concerned citizen. I respectfully urge you to vote to pass HF 3403 and advance it in the legislative process. This morning, like many mornings since the arrival of 3,000 federal agents to Minnesota, I provided transportation for children of immigrant families in my community so that they could safely get to school. That is just one of several mutual aid efforts many of us have taken on to help preserve the dignity, health, and stability of our neighbors. We are providing many supports, including food, rent assistance, and access to medical care. Right now, many immigrant families in my area have been unable to work since December due to community safety concerns related to federal immigration enforcement actions. At the same time, they are coping with significant trauma, including the detention of family and community members. The result is profound economic instability layered on top of significant emotional distress. Families are at immediate risk of homelessness. We've seen before how state leadership can stabilize communities in times of crisis. During the pandemic, Minnesota responded decisively. Eviction protections and emergency supports kept families housed and prevented deeper instability. These policies worked. They protected families and preserved communities. Today, we are facing another moment of housing insecurity for vulnerable families. Emergency rental assistance is not only a financial intervention. It is a trauma-informed, family-centered policy that prevents homelessness, keeps students in school, makes it easier for people to return to work, and reduces long-term public costs. I want to close with the words of a remarkable 17-year-old student I have been fortunate to get to know as we go back and forth between school. She adeptly translates between Quiche, Spanish, and English for her entire extended family while attending school and working part-time. Recently, she said, "It's so good to feel cared for. We really feel supported by the people helping us." House File 3403 is an opportunity for the state of Minnesota to extend that sense of care and stability. Preventing eviction is one of the most concrete ways we can protect children, families, and communities during a period of economic disruption and trauma. Thank you so much for your time. And once again, I respectfully ask you to pass House File 3403 and advance it forward.
Thank you. Next, we have Rico Morales, a resident from Hennepin County. Welcome to the committee.
Hola, buenas tardes. Good afternoon, everyone. Hello, Chair of this committee. My name is Rico Morales, and I live at 23rd Street and Elliott Avenue in Minneapolis, in the Heart of the Beast neighborhood called Phillips, Ventura Village in Minneapolis. The need for emergency rental assistance is urgent. The time for emergency rental assistance is now, not 6 months from now, not 18 months from now. Right now is the time to do a good thing. With your help and your support for emergency rental assistance, this will be a vote to support families, to support the immigrant neighbors and friends that we have here in our neighborhood. Anyone who may apply for this help can be eligible for this assistance. The struggle we have here in Minnesota is not unique, but there are very intense during these times of uncertainty and insecurity for our neighbors and our families who are choosing to stay home inside to stay away from predators, away from kidnappers, away from abductions that interrupt their daily lives. The need for emergency rental assistance is extremely dire. We are asking you for your financial support, for your political support, showing up. Please show up and support this vote for House File 3403 to be on the right side of history. These are supports that families need in order to maintain this economy, in order to maintain the neighborhoods, in order to maintain this great, beautiful, wonderful city and state that I was born and raised in all my life. And I've never had to carry a birth certificate. I've never had to carry my ID like I do now. I am a hunted person. I am hunted on a regular basis by the federal government because of my skin color and because of my status. And I thank you for letting me be here to testify and to give you my experience, to give you my wisdom, and to share with you this victory that a vote for House File 3403 will help bolster the support that we need for families in this community. I appreciate your time here as well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Last, we have Jordan May, Executive Director of the Red Lake Homeless Shelter, testifying virtually.
Good afternoon, House Housing Finance and Policy Committee members. I'm Jordan May, the Executive Director of the Red Lake Homeless Shelter. I'm a band member of the Red Lake Nation. Red Lake is a founding member of the Minnesota Tribal Collaborative, a unique collaboration of 10 Minnesota tribes working together to prevent and end homelessness on and off the reservation. I'm here today in support of House File 3403, a bill for emergency rental assistance. Red Lake, along with other tribal nations, have experienced the economic downturn of having ice in Minnesota for the past couple of months. Our Native American relatives, despite being Native American, have been stopped by ice and have been intimidated to not go out shopping, to work, or to school. Tribes have been issued hundreds of tribal IDs in the hopes of keeping our community members safe, and even that hasn't made a difference. The trauma of ICE has made homelessness more dire for our community, and this has been especially true for Native Americans living off the reservation in the Twin Cities. Red Lake has a supportive housing project, Minowajin, on Red Lake and Franklin in Minneapolis. This project provides over 100 units of affordable housing with on-site services. But this housing has been in the middle of the ICE Operation Metro surge, and the tenants have felt the impact. This new trauma comes just as we are recovering from COVID. In Minnesota, Native Americans are more than 30 times more likely to experience homelessness. Nearly half of the Native Americans experiencing homelessness not on the reservation are in Hennepin County. This reflects the federal government's relocation program started in the 1950s, which encouraged Native Americans to move to the urban areas for jobs and housing. Unfortunately, neither the jobs nor housing materialized. This caused the cycle of poverty and homelessness to grow worse for Native Americans. Many Native Americans who are homeless are also unsheltered at a rate of over two times what non-Native adults experience. Unsheltered homelessness brings a whole nother level of trauma, including violence and sexual assault. The Minnesota Tribal Collaborative was formed to address these disparities, as every tribe in Minnesota feels the effects and harm that homelessness causes to our communities. Tribes know best how to serve their people, and we take a long-term approach to our work, thinking ahead seven generations. House File 3403 will direct $6 million to tribes for rental assistance to address and prevent homelessness over the next 6 months. Tribes in Minnesota are experienced and capable of using this type of funding. We will work quickly to help people keep their housing or to move someone from homelessness to housing. The staff of the Minnesota Tribal Collaborative will assist tribal staff in reporting and ensure that all the funding designated for the tribes is used as rental assistance. The tribes of Minnesota have been successfully utilizing FHPAP funding for over a decade and the local homeless prevention aid since 2023. So I would just like to end in endorsing our support for House File 3403 and look for your support as well. Thank you.
Thank you. That is the list of folks that have signed up to testify. We'll move on to discussion to the bill. But first, I wanted to ask if there's anybody in attendance that would like to testify. If so, come to the table. Not seeing anybody, so we can move to member discussion. Up first on the list, Representative Mamani Hiltzley.
Thank you so much, Chair, for the opportunity. First of all, thank you so much, Representative Lish, for bringing this up. It is important, especially me as an immigrant and policymaker. I have seen firsthand the impact of ICE in our communities. It's not just the fear that it has created. It creates an economic shockwaves, right? When income vanishes overnight, housing insecurities follows, and the entire community feels the impact of that. This bill is not just a $50 million emergency rental assistance bill. It is an economic stabilization tool. If this body chooses to ignore the stories and the lived experiences that have been expressed here today, let's not make the mistake of ignoring the long-term economic consequences of this. When we allow evictions to happen, the cost doesn't just disappear. It literally multiplies. You know, counties will spend more on shelters, schools observe the instability, employers lose workers, healthcare systems shoulder the preventative crisis. So evictions is expensive for everyone. And right now, let's be honest, you know, we are seeing this ripple effect, not only here in the Twin Cities, but in rural Minnesota as well. I also want to thank the advocacy groups and the testifiers for coming out. You guys are the real MVPs in this case. I have worked with many of you, especially from my district, Nalima Sateti Munene from ACER, who I have personally referred folks to because as a legislator, I don't have the funding personally to give folks who've come up and talked about, you know, they're about to be evicted, right? So organizations like that. And to those concerned about accountability and fraud, right? There's so much safeguards in this bill that, you know, the way it will be administered will prevent fraud and ensure responsible distributions of those funds. Emergency rental assistance, again, is not a handout. It is an opportunity for us to bridge the gap and make smart bridges so that it can save us more in the long run. I will finish with this. In Minnesota, we have done this time and time again, taking care of our neighbors. And this is another way of showing that, stepping up when we have to. So House File 3403 keeps family housed, our workforce stable, and our economy strong. So I urge this committee to support this bill. And this bill is so important to this committee that I'm requesting a roll call. Thank you.
All right. Representative Mamani Hiltzley requests a roll call. So we'll take a roll call on this bill when we get to a vote. Next, Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Kozlowski. Thank you for bringing this bill. I understand the intent and the heart behind this bill. The concern I have, you know, I'll just start with saying I think we all have had friends, family, neighbors, and maybe some of ourselves have been homeless. However, with that said, we've just came off of an $18 billion surplus that disappeared during 2023. Now we're facing a structural deficit as we move forward. Now we're looking for an additional $50 million for this program. I'll roll back the good old days. We used to see where religious communities would step in and actually help in situations like this. So I guess I'm looking to see if we can explore maybe some alternative options as we move forward. With this $50 million, we're looking at a one-time appropriation. is what you're asking for. What assurance do we have to make certain that this truly is just a one-time appropriation, that it isn't going to be an ongoing program that moves forward?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Vice Chair Dotteth. And I also forgot to mention that we've got a great partner in justice and former housing committee member here in Rep. Egbaje to tap in as well. And I appreciate the question. You know, it's one that when I step back and I look at the scale of the problem and what Minnesotans are telling us and what the data is showing is that $50 million even that is not enough to plug the holes. I am here because, as many of you know, I come from homelessness, and I have lived that as far too many Minnesotans, and the work that we've done in this committee to make those investments with the dollars that we've made over the past couple of bienniums, the biggest investments. And I would just say, you know, looking ahead at the forecast, you know, we have a $2.5 billion surplus, and we have in the last month's revenue $513 million above anticipated revenue. I think we need to be principled and disciplined, but that using this $50 million as an investment targeted one time out to trusted partners who do this day in and day out at the county level with our trusted nonprofits, with CAF agencies, and many others who know how to maximize and stretch the dollars. I think the reality of where we're at with homelessness in Minnesota, the estimates to solve homelessness in the country is somewhere around $30 billion. And so that speaks to the need for dedicated, ongoing revenue. You are right, and I agree with you, and I look forward to digging in. And if my co-presenter here has anything else to add as the chair of, vice chair of Ways and Means and the money folks, feel free to chime in. But this is really what we do in crisis. We've done this when there's been natural disasters for flood, snow. We've done this when economic downturns for manufacturing has hit, when pandemics have hit. And this is truly a crisis, and that is the level of need that we need to respond with.
Representative Egbaje, who I would say housing committee member emeritus.
Well, thank you, Chair Howard and Chair Igo. It's good to be back in front of the committee. I will just add to Vice Chair Dotteth's question. We have made really strong investments in housing. I think in the 2023-2024 cycle, what we noticed, though, is even though we put in $1 billion, that was still a drop in the bucket for the need that was in Minnesota for housing. And so what we are doing is we are still letting those investments incur, and we're still receiving benefits from those investments, but we are now in a particularly acute situation through no fault of our own, no fault of any Minnesotan across the state, but they are now in a dire circumstance that has prevented them from going to work, from actually making an income to be able to care for themselves. And what we do as Minnesotans is we stand up and we care for each other when we know we're in an emergency situation.
Anything further, Representative Dotteth? Representative Dotteth.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Just to follow up on that, so I'm hearing you say that probably will not be just a one-time appropriation. You'd be looking at maybe something continued on program is what I'm hearing you say. Is that correct?
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Vice Chair Dotteth. In terms of what we're coming in with, this is establishing a one-time program for the county and tribal aid, and in this specific vein or format is only one time. I'm referencing the work, the broad work that we have to do together to really tackle housing as it stands and make those investments to end homelessness. But in terms of this program, this is just a one time. I hope that you will not see me coming back for additional funds.
Representative Nash.
Unfortunately,
Sorry. Do you have anything further, Representative Dotteth? Okay. Sorry about that. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to our two chairs, I don't believe we've talked about targets. We don't have them. We're in effectively the first actual day of legislative action. Typically, a number like this would be a part of a target. And I will disagree with my colleagues, both of who I consider allies in housing. $1 billion is not a drop in the bucket. That is a very large number, and it pales. It's astounding that someone would say that, but I just wanted to point out that if you've been here for very long, you know that I'm about process, and it is typical when we enter into the second year of the biennium after we've fully funded government and the programs that we've all advocated for, there are times when things get asked as a supplemental, which is effectively what you're asking. This is a supplemental one-time emergency request. But it is unwise, in my opinion, to get out ahead of the February forecast. It is unwise to do so when we recognize, because if we've listened to the November forecast, we recognize that the, I'll use air quotes, the surplus that we have for this year is dubious at best. And I just think that anytime we show up on day one, effectively, so first day of legislative action, and we're asking for this type of money after having, I believe, the last year's number was $30 million for this same type of approach, on the heels of $1 billion from the previous biennium, we're getting out, since it's Winter Olympics time, we're getting out over our skis on this. Wait for the forecast. Is going to be illustrative. We will learn a lot of things as a result of that. Recognize that a surplus that we have today isn't actually a surplus, and that the 27 fiscal year is not in conjunction with the calendar year of 27. It starts before that. So we have to really consider, what is it we're spending? How much are we spending? On what are we spending it? And we're way ahead of things here. We don't even know what the February forecast is going to say. So I just think that we are getting well ahead of ourselves here. And I'm going to be a no vote, because this is not how process should work on a situation like this. Thank you.
Response, Representative Kozlowski, Representative Gbadje.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Howard. I guess my question back would be, how should process work when we are in an emergency situation? We are currently facing a situation where people have not been able to go to work, businesses have not been able to open, people who usually make money or make an income just do not have that opportunity. And while normally, in a normal situation, I would say yes, let's wait for the forecast, let's look at our budget targets, right now we know, similar to if a tornado had happened or a flood had happened in January or December, we would be coming here saying, we need to support Minnesotans who are suffering from an emergency disaster through no fault of their own. That is what we're bringing here. And so I would just say that the actual cost of waiting, when we actually know what the impacts already are, based on estimates from our cities, as you heard from a city council member from Minneapolis, but also based on estimates that are now coming in from other parts of the state, we have an idea of what the need is. And we can do our part to support the NGOs, the churches, the philanthropic organizations who are also doing their part to raise money to support our neighbors. So I would say that in an emergency situation, sometimes we have to upend the process a little bit to ensure that we meet the needs of Minnesotans.
Further, Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And here's a point of disagreement that we'll have. I don't think that they have had an inability to go to work. And we'll differ on that particular point. But once again, the process is the process, irrespective of what we think. Even in emergency situations, we get a target for that emergency situation. We talk about that. It goes through the entire process. You're asking for an appropriation out of this. You're asking for it to go to Ways and Means directly. We've not heard from the state economists. We've not heard from anybody else. We're not actually doing the full-throated work that we should be doing on this. We're not waiting for the February forecast. We're not waiting for anything. We're just trying to hit the gas and go. So once again, I'm a no.
Representative Hussein.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Chair Ego. Well, what we have seen in the media is not something that we can ignore. This is an emergency situation that we're in. You might not know many people that this has been affected, but it is affecting our district, metro area. I strongly support 3403 legislation that provide a target for rental assistance. Housing stability is not a luxury. It is the foundation that safety, healthy, and economic opportunity when a family loses their home, children fall behind. In a school, workers lose employment, and the community face significant, a higher public cost. I witnessed and I seen And I'm still contacting a lot of my community members and in my district and the surrounding that is really struggling. This is the time that we should stand up and help for those people that really need. We cannot have more homelessness. This is the time that we can prevent. I have a neighborhood that her husband was the bread making and he was taken away. He's had a legitimate paperwork. He was working, making income, and creating taxpayer for our state and federal. He ended up in Texas. God knows where he is. His wife has an American kid who's born here. They're struggling. This is the time that we need to step up and try to do what's right. We came from COVID, and we all came together and saved life. We delivered foods. We take care of one another. We took care of those people that really needed medications. What happened in Minnesota? I was traveling to other state a couple of weeks ago, and they were like, what's happening in Minnesota? We're really feeling bad. Is this America? Is this what we're seeing? People has been kidnapped. People are struggling. People do not have a food at the table. And we're asking for those people that really needed to support. And in housing in Minnesota history, we only spent $1 billion in 2023. Go back on the record. We used to spend like $2 million up to $10 million, and that's not enough. If we need to address the housing crisis, we need to address that. That is why in Minnesota we are really behind when it comes to housing crisis. Other states doing better than us. They're stepping up. They're not handing out, they're helping, creating workforce, creating affordable housing, a place for people to stay. We're behind thousands when it comes to construction housing. This is the time that we can do one step at a time. I know we can get along. This is a really do or die bill that's really saving life, people. We don't want to regret it later on when we see hundreds of people on the street. My colleagues, both sides, please support this bill. Thank you.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. You know, we talk about states of emergency. This morning, Highway 61, Highway 1 were closed. That's emergencies, you know. Right now, I just got a text from someone that said the road between Ely and Tower is not plowed. You know, those are natural emergencies. Those occur. One of the questions I have, has the governor declared an emergency? Because he has access to those funds. He can release funds for emergencies. I couldn't help but listen to Council Member Chowdhury. As a former mayor, yes, we have a budget, and that is the dollars we get to use and spend. And when an emergency happens, especially when you have smaller budgets, it's harder to find money to take care of issues. $50 million doesn't seem like a lot of money, but again, we have no targets. We have no money right now set forward. Is this worthy? Obviously it is. I mean, I sat for 9 years on Second Harvest Food Bank in Duluth and watched homelessness and went to Chum and hung out with all these people. And I role played in committees and meetings on how to, and it's nothing that I want to live like, and I want to help people so they don't have to live that way. I understand that. But at the same time, do we have $50 million laying around for housing? That's the question right now. And I don't see it. I haven't seen it yet. I can't help but just go back to listen to what Council Member Chowdhury, when she said, you know, we're putting $1 million into it. but it doesn't even come close what we need. And then we hear $50 million in January and February, and these dollars are just going to keep coming and coming. And it seems more like a systemic problem to me than just the ICE issue. It seems like this has been coming around for a long time, and perhaps we need to look at this as in a different light. And right now I'm having a hard time understanding the direct emergency where we need to find the dollars within our budget first before we spend something we don't have.
Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you so much. I'll try to be short because I know we got a long committee. I just want to say I speak in support of the bill. A couple of reasons. This money is going to go directly to landlords, so we're going to save them costs too, in addition to reducing public long-term costs. So it really is fiscally responsible. But in addition to that, I really need to take a minute to apologize to all of our testifiers for what you've experienced over the last month and a half. And that's going to continue for months to come. And I want to make a direct apology to Jordan May, Executive Director of Red Lake Homeless Shelter, if you can still hear me. There's nothing that makes it more clear that the federal government through ICE and CBP was racially profiling than the fact that they detained Native Americans and have had a presence on tribal lands. You as a people were here first. Thank you. That's all I have to say.
Co-Chair Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to Representative Kozlowski for the bill today. Thank you to everyone that came and testified, and thank you, members, for a spirited debate. Where I want to start, I remember when I first started working on this committee with you, Representative Howard, you and I had great conversations on homelessness prevention aid, FHPAP. I learned a lot about it over the last year and how critically important it is and the good it does. There's no denying that. But I think to be on the first day of committee without a budget target, without any state of emergency, and to be going out here saying we're going to spend $50 million that we don't even know if we have, that is a really challenging role as a legislature and as individual legislators, because our duty is not only to rise to the moment, but is to make sure that the next legislature after us and way past us when we're all done serving here is left in a good place for the future taxpayers of the state of Minnesota. And that's our most important job of all. And for that reason, we can't move forward with something like this today. But we can continue to have conversations. We can continue to talk about other solutions, right? And I think something that's critically important that we need to contribute to this conversation is that when we talk about folks having the ability to pay rent and have that affordability in their lives, Minnesota is expensive. Right? We are one of the highest taxed states in the nation. That doesn't help when it comes to meet your rent. We have some of the highest utility rates in the nation. That doesn't help when it comes to meeting your rent. These are the kind of things that we need to look at collectively as Republicans and as Democrats about how we can stabilize costs here in Minnesota to make Minnesota more affordable. Because like you said, this problem, and when we talk about FHPAP and we talk about this, the need is there, and it's larger than before the incidents that have happened over the last couple weeks and the last couple months. They've been there. So why have they been there? And I think it's a larger conversation that we need to sit down and get really real with each other and start addressing some of those things as larger costs. So unfortunately today, like I said, I am going to be a no vote because we need to think twice and act once on the precedents that we set as this institution and move forward as a committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I'll make a few comments and then go to Representative Kozlowski for final remarks. I just need to gather my thoughts here myself. A few things. One, just based on what we've heard today from testifiers in the discussion, a few things were raised. One is the specter of is this an emergency or not? It absolutely is an emergency for Minnesotans, in particular Minnesotans who are people of color in our communities all across the state. The real question for us as legislators, if we are going to treat this as an emergency like we would for other Minnesotans, this is a real crisis, and we have to face that choice amongst ourselves. The precedent of this legislature has been to respond quickly, urgently, when Minnesotans are in crisis, and they are, deeply. Second, this crisis is being caused by the federal occupation of our state. Let's be clear. Yes, there are housing challenges in a deep crisis before Operation Metro Surge began, but we cannot put our heads in the sand and pretend that what the federal government has done to our community hasn't caused this. And no one should lose their home because the federal government is terrorizing our communities. And I just need to take a minute or two to describe what's happening in my community in Richfield. And I know that this is happening all across the state in different ways and presenting itself, but I really want to convey what it has been like in my community over these last 2.5 months. We have been under siege. At every turn, ICE agents camping out at our places of business that are frequented by people of color. ICE agents camping out at specific apartment complexes because they know that's where more people of color live in our communities. Detaining people, whether they are citizens or not. Every single person of color that I know in the city of Richfield is carrying multiple forms of identification because they're afraid of being harassed by their own federal government. Our schools, 1,000 kids in our schools are not going to school. 1,000 kids in families that have parents that are at risk or unable to work. The trauma is unimaginable. And what our community's response has been in this darkness is to not wait. There was an allusion to we can't get over our skis. Minnesotans haven't waited. They responded immediately with their love for thy neighbor. And it reminds me of a quote that Mr. Rogers would say, that when I was a boy, I would see scary things in the news, and my mother would say, look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping. And that is what Minnesotans have done. In our community, almost in a matter of weeks, an amazing community response fund sprouted up, funding tens of thousands of dollars of rental assistance. But they made the choice to specifically target families with kids in Richfield schools because that's where they saw the need. And all of that dollars is, right now, is just going to families in Richfield schools, and it's out. It's not enough. It's only scratching the surface. And so we need to take a lesson from Minnesotans who aren't waiting, who understand the humanity and the suffering that's happening in their communities, and they're taking action, and we can too. They have shown us the way. We have a choice. We can choose action or inaction, to be helpers or to ignore suffering, to use our power or surrender it. And if we show just a fraction of the courage that Minnesotans have shown in these last 2 months, we can do important things this session. We need to help our communities heal and come back stronger. And this bill with emergency rental assistance is such a vital first step. And so I would encourage every member to vote like a good neighbor and vote yes. Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Members, regardless of where you stand on unlawful federal enforcement that has come crashing down in our state, the economic consequences of our already surging housing crisis is in every single one of our communities and beyond. I'm disappointed that we're here time and time again, and we hear from Minnesotans who are telling us that this is their reality, this is what they are facing, that these are the things that they need dire help with now, that they're already stepping into the gaps for. Our counties, landlords, small businesses, renters. But I want to center us on the fact that there were 2,200 evictions filed in January alone. That's statewide data from Minnesota courts. That's not me making it up. That's not from a tenant hotline. That is state court data filed. That is going to have massive impacts on Minnesotans. That's having massive impacts on our court workers themselves, on landlords, on small businesses everywhere, from lost wages, missed rent payments, and a sharp increase in families falling behind, and community telling us that they cannot continue to crowdfund their way forward. There was a report yesterday that CURE put out by the University of Minnesota that painted a picture of what already was cascading in Minnesota and put the numbers upwards of 40 million, 7% of Minnesotans who are at least 1 month behind in rent, and with Operation Metro Surge tacked on another $50 million. So if and when federal agents ever do leave Minnesota, it doesn't matter because we'll still be here picking up the pieces of the destruction and trying to clean up the messes from the work that we've already been trying to do to end and prevent homelessness. And so I just have to say I'm honestly at a loss for words when we hear from our counties talk about how they're already overprescribed on the rental assistance that we've pushed out, that by quarter one, there are no funds left. In my county, they said there was something like 8 families that they could serve. And so we have a choice, as Chair Howard mentioned, that we have evictions are looming amidst this surge on top of a housing crisis, that nobody should lose their home because they're being terrorized by their own federal government. So to the members here, as we're going to vote on this, I ask you, are you going to stand with hardworking people, healthcare workers, child care workers, hospital workers, with educators, with unions, with families and their kids, in small businesses? Please vote yes.
All right, thank you, members. I will renew the motion, Representative Kozlowski's motion that House File 3403 as amended be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means, and our CLA will take the roll.
Co-Chair Howard?
Aye.
Howard votes aye. Co-Chair Igo?
No.
Igo votes no. Vice Co-Chair Kozlowski?
Yes.
Kozlowski votes aye. Vice Co-Chair Dotseth?
No.
Vice Co-Chair Dotseth votes no. Representative Buck?
Yes.
Buck votes aye. Representative Hussein?
Aye.
Hussein votes aye. Representative Johnson?
No.
Representative Johnson votes no. Representative Meckland? Meckland votes no. Representative Womani Hiltzley?
Aye.
Representative Womani Hiltzley votes aye. Representative Myers?
Nay.
Myers votes nay. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash votes nay. Representative Norris?
Aye.
Norris votes aye. Representative Rayrar?
Aye.
Rayrar votes aye. Representative Scraba?
No.
Scraba votes no.
On a vote of 7 ayes and 7 nays, the motion does not prevail. And for members of the public, just from a process standpoint, even though the vote does not proceed today, there's still opportunities for this committee to bring this bill up again in the future. Bill 2 is Representative Sensor Mirror's bill, House 3410. And as Representative Sensor Mirror is coming up on really our first day of legislative action, she's already presenting 2 bills in 2 committees at the same time. So we are going to try to do the best we can to get Representative Sensor Mirror out here, but we might have to send her on her way when we get to member discussion.
Thank you.
And since Representative Sensor Mirror is not a member of the committee, I will move that House File 3410 be passed and re-referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And I will also move your A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe it?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. So this amendment removes language about third parties that are not nonprofits to narrow the scope of this bill. It strikes the word government before assistance to make it clear that nonprofits can show a certificate of redemption from privately raised dollars, not just from government sources.
Any questions to the author's amendment? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted. Representative Sensor, to your bill as amended.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Housing Committee members. It has been a long interim, as I'm sure we all know. I think I heard at the beginning of your committee that it was last April 9th when you're in committee. So much has happened in our state since then. And I want to just take a brief moment. I think it's been well illustrated by Representative Kozlowski's bill, but I hope that you will allow me just one moment to talk about what has been happening in my community in the last couple months since we were all together at the legislature. If one of your communities had had a disaster, whether it was like Representative Scraba talked about a road that was closed, I know Representative Igo, you have shared about, you know, mines closing, people being laid off, the disaster that it brings to your communities. If your community had a disaster while we were out of session, I would listen with an open heart. And so I ask you to do the same today. So just to explain a little bit about what has been happening in my community in the last 2 months, since ICE and the federal government began their invasion on our communities, shaking the foundation of our way of life. My family has been in the U.S. for over 100 years, and I do not leave home now without my passport. One day in January, in late January, I realized that my four-year-old son had spent basically no time outside in the month of January. So I started getting him ready. I got all his stuff to go sledding. And then I looked at my phone and I heard that ICE was at our nearby park where we were going to go sledding. I watched the messages as they came in talking about deploying pepper spray on observers. So we decided to not go to the park that day. The other day I heard my son, he was playing, he was talking about playing bad guys. And I asked him, I said, what do bad guys do? And he told me, bad guys come and take people. So this is just a glimpse into my family who, you know, has more privilege than many of what we have been living through under Metro Surge. For many people, including myself, over the last couple months, home has been the only place that we have felt safe. I'm sure your committee talks all the time about how home is the foundation of safety for people. Home can be a lifeline. But it has never more real than under Operation Metro Surge in the Twin Cities. I know families that have not left their homes in 2.5 months because of fear. Young people not being able to go to school, people not being able to go to their jobs, people relying on strangers to sometimes bring them groceries, and going days or weeks without food if they are not able to get in contact with someone. In this gap, and a gap created by the federal government, and a gap where the state has not yet stepped in, as we just saw from the vote that I'm so sad that it did not pass, communities have stepped up. Communities have stepped up with what Representative Howard talked about, being the helpers. You know, people have talked about how Minnesota is showing the nation a new form of neighborism. Neighbors have stepped into the gap, and this bill would allow neighbors to continue to help intervene, to help each other, to ensure that people can stay safe in their homes, just ensure they are not evicted. This bill would allow churches, school groups, neighborhood organizations, all of those who have been stepping up for the last few months, to be able to support people in staying in their homes by offering them a certificate of redemption so that they would not be evicted. This happens when a group is maybe not able to procure the cash right away, but is able to guarantee that they will be able to provide the rental assistance. By removing the word government, it ensures that it's not just nonprofits that have government sources of rental assistance, but the many organizations who have been able to fundraise based off of what is happening in our communities to support each other. So this bill is a testament to the amazing mutual aid that has come out of Operation Metro Surge, come out of the terror that has been inflicted on our communities. Neighbors are helping each other stay in their homes, and the little thing that government can do today is just ensure that neighbors who are wanting to support another neighbor from not being evicted are able to do that. So I hope that you will be able to support this bill today. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go to testifiers, and up first is Ann Smitek, Director and Senior Counsel of the Housing Justice Center. And on deck is Cecil Smith. If you could state your name and give us your testimony. And I'll remind folks, we are going to be tight to get these two bills in, so to the extent you can keep your testimony to 2 minutes would be much appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Howard. And Chair Igoe, my name is Ann Smedic. I'm a director and senior counsel with the Housing Justice Center. The Housing Justice Center is a nonprofit public interest legal organization whose primary focus is to preserve and expand affordable housing and improve the housing system for all Minnesotans. At the outset, I want to thank this committee for taking up these important issues so early in session and for considering ways the legislature can act to preserve the stability of tenants and the overall housing ecosystem in Minnesota. The Housing Justice Center strongly supports House File 3410, which will expand the ability of tenants to redeem a tenancy with a non-governmental source of assistance. Right now, state statute allows tenants to redeem a tenancy with a written guarantee from either a government entity or a nonprofit organization that administers a government rental assistance program. That strong protection prevents renters from being evicted before emergency funds arrive. This bill would expand the protection to allow tenants to also redeem with a guarantee letter from a nonprofit entity that does not operate a government rental assistance program. That minor change would allow non-governmental funds to go farther and be used to keep tenants in their home. It would allow charitable giving from a variety of sources, including philanthropy, local organizations, and religious institutions like churches, to be used to allow tenants to redeem their tenancy. And respectfully, if this committee is not going to pass additional governmental rental assistance, I strongly recommend that you pass this bill to let the local dollars go farther. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Cecil Smith, President and CEO of Minnesota Multi Housing Association. And next, after that will be Andrea Inoue, Program Director of Family Housing Fund. Mr. Smith, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Chair Igoe, members of the committee. My name is Cecil Smith. I'm President and CEO of the Minnesota Multi Housing Association. We represent 2,300 members who serve over 600,000 renters who make their home in more than 300,000 rental homes provided by our members. Our members are housing providers. We create housing and manage and maintain that housing, which is home to hundreds of thousands of Minnesotans. Our members have responded, as they have done in all the unprecedented times that we've lived through in the last 6 years, with professionalism and compassion. The record of the last 6 years speaks for itself. In fact, 2 hours ago, I got a text message. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your compassion and patience for your tenants who have been unable to work these past 8 weeks. We are a group of volunteers who have raised and paid over $1 million in rent, and we reach out to landlords to navigate payment. All have been so kind and willing to work with us. This is truly a partnership, and the landlords are the unsung heroes. We are firmly opposed to House File 3410 as amended, even as we appreciate the author's intent. There is significant and unbounded scope expansion with this language change, such as private assistance efforts that would seem to qualify. Remember, it's not cash or a check, it's just a letter of guarantee. There are no standards for program reliability. Will they actually pay? Do they have the money? Or timelines for fund disbursement? When will they pay? Our experience with counties withdrawing letters of guarantee has informed us that there are no remedies after a case is dismissed. The proposed language is silent in this circumstance. Again, we're opposed to the bill. Thank you for listening.
Up next, we have Andrea Inoue, and on deck we have Nalima Setiti Munani. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, good afternoon, Chairs Howard and Igoe and members of the Housing, Finance, and Policy Committee. My name is Andrea Inoue, and I'm the program director at the Family Housing Fund. Our mission is to transform the housing system to be equitable, collaborative, and resilient so that all Minnesotans have access to quality, stable, affordable housing of their choice. We believe that it takes all of us working together to build a strong system that supports access to decent, affordable homes for everyone. It is in the spirit of that belief that I'm pleased to be here before you to speak in support of this body's efforts to address the needs of Minnesota residents facing housing instability due to the impacts of Operation Metro Surge, and specifically in support of House File 3410. The Family Housing Fund has been deeply engaged in work to prevent evictions and strengthen the safety net for emergency rental assistance since 2018. A core tenet of our work has been to create a system where the assistance moves at the speed of the emergency without compromising the checks and balances needed. In recent months, neighborhood groups, teacher-parent associations, faith communities, community businesses, family foundations, and so many more have stepped up to support their neighbors in need. Due to the diffuse nature of this type of community sport, it is difficult to quantify their exact financial impact, but it's safe to say that it's in the millions of dollars. House File 3410 would serve to open the door for mutual aid and government partners to work in tandem to support housing stability for as many Minnesota residents as possible. Guarantee letters have been a critical element in speeding up the assistance process while maintaining strong financial controls and oversight. Acceptance of a guarantee letter can easily speed up the financial assistance process by a week, helping to avoid the costs and trauma of eviction court. Expanding the definition of who can provide a guaranteed letter is the kind of thoughtful and strategic policy change this moment calls for. In our crisis response, the Family Housing Fund has been working to support mutual aid efforts as they work to grow and evolve, in one case through a fiscal sponsorship, strengthening the capacity of community-based nonprofits on the front lines, providing $450,000 in grants for this work, and helping government partners to both act now and consider policies and funding levels for the long run. All three pathways need to be working in tandem to meet this moment. It will take actions large and small from mutual aid, community-based nonprofits, philanthropy, the private sector, and governmental bodies to meet this moment and stabilize our neighbors. House File 3410 will help prevent an eviction surge by ensuring mutual aid dollars serve their intended purpose of preserving housing stability for more Minnesota families. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. And our last testifier, we have Nalima Sitati Munani, Executive Director from ACER. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Howard, Chair Igo. My name is Nalima Sitati Munane. I'm the Executive Director of the African Career Education and Resource Inc. ACER is an issue-based community organization, and we work to close inequity gaps within our communities. So according to a February 2026 CURA report, the monthly rent debt among low-wealth households in Minnesota in 2025 was $22.3 million, which is 10 times greater than the $2.3 million monthly budget for the state rental assistance program. And we know that economic and political shocks, such as the ones we have experienced in our state since 2020, trigger additional excess debt and rent due to the instability. So what this reports on state funding gaps and current political and social climates reveal is that government on its own is not able to address these needs proficiently and effectively on its own. We need an adjustment to our policies. And while we are calling on our state and federal governments to do more and to resolve this housing crisis once and for all, Minnesotans have demonstrated their resilience and care for their neighbors in helping to meet their needs. Formal community-based organizations, church social programs and groups and mutual aid groups have stepped in to fill in the gap of assisting our community members to preserve their housing. Nonprofit and community organizations continue to be the first point of contact that community reaches out to in time of need. We are the fast and trusted responders for our communities. We are more accessible and we are their fast bridge builders. ACER is not a traditional renting housing provider, but since the COVID crisis, we have stepped in time and time again when our community has called on us in times of crisis. The recent ICE invasion has been no different. Since December of 2025, we began receiving requests for rental assistance and had to respond to our community. To date, we have disbursed assistance to almost 200 households focusing in the northwest suburbs, and we have protected the housing of over 1,000 people. ACER is in support of House File 3410 to enable community organizations to continue to support tenants in crisis to pay their rent. The amendment to this bill will enable parties other than government entities to provide assurance to landlords that families are in the process of receiving the required rent they owe and prevent an eviction filing. This will help to pause eviction actions on tenants while the process of their rent payment for families in need takes course. Eviction filings have a very negative effect on families already struggling. An amendment to this law will provide another layer of protection to our community members in need and reduce one less burden for them to worry about. It supports children continuing to go to school, parents to work, and supports the continued stability of our communities. I urge you to support House File 3410 to recognize not only the critical role that community organizations play, but also to increase the options that families in need can tap into to address their rental needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we'll move on to member discussion. Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you, Chair Howard. In this case, this actually...
If I could, I wanted to see if Ms. Smitek could join us at the table. As I mentioned, Representative Simpson-Mura is also presenting a bill in another committee, and I know worked closely together and to help with some technical questions. And folks can also direct member questions to the chair as well. Representative Ray Rauer.
Okay. So thank you, Chair Howard. In this case, this truly is a simple bill because it deletes one word. It doesn't require funding from this committee. And it puts a formal process in place that will prevent evictions with community dollars. So it really is an upstream preventative measure that's going to reduce public costs long term. I'm speaking in support of the bill. And, Chair, I would like to request a roll call vote.
Representative Raywar has requested a roll call, so there will be a roll call vote on the bill. Representative Johnson.
Chair Howard, thank you. The concern I have regarding this bill is it creates more uncertainty in Minnesota for investors in apartments. The market rate of investment in building of apartments has crashed in Minnesota. It's basically gone down to negligible numbers. The ones that are being built are the ones that are affordable housing that are involved with investing the money and stuff coming in, which is very spotty whether you get it or not. So what I'm concerned is this bill continues to create uncertainty to investors building apartments in Minnesota who are building throughout the country, because I've talked to an investor, I talked to multiple housing over there, that investments throughout the country are still being made in apartments, but not in Minnesota. And as part of it is because of the uncertainty that is happening here. The concern about this is the fact that you know, first of all, anybody can show up with cash and just catch people up. But the uncertainty, my belief is that is all there has to be is a piece of paper showing up when an eviction order is happening, which it takes a while to get there, show up with a piece of paper saying we're going to promise you this money, and then all of a sudden they don't pay it 2-3 months down the road. There's no repercussions, and then the landlord has to start over the process again. That there's nothing in there that's saying it has to be guaranteed, the money has to be somewhere, whatever. That's the concern I have, is there's no certainty that that money would ever be paid, and it starts the whole process over again. Thank you.
Ms. Smitek, I wonder if you could describe a little bit how these guarantee letters are working in practice currently.
Sure, I'd be happy to. Thank you, Chair Howard, and thank you, Representative. At the outset, though, I would argue that this actually creates more certainty for landlords, because I have never met a landlord that didn't want to have rental arrears paid, and this opens the door to having better access to non-governmental resources, which it seems we're going to need to rely on for a little while. So I think there is actually more certainty on that point. But to your question about logistics, my understanding and how it generally works is that right now there is a letter provided from either a governmental rental assistance program or a nonprofit that operates the government rental assistance program, and as required by statute, it is a guarantee that they have sufficient funds, that they are agreeing to pay the money, and that sets out the amount that they are agreeing to pay, which I believe needs to include all of the rental arrears up to that point, as well as any court fees, and I believe there's a nominal fee for attorney's fees as well. When that is provided, that is then essentially is treated as an enforceable guarantee so that the tenant is allowed to redeem their tenancy.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair Howard. What happens if that person who is providing the guarantee says, we ran out of money, the fund went away, we can't do it now? What protections does the landlord have? Do they end up having to find an attorney now and going after that organization?
Ms. Smitek.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks, Chair Howard. Thank you, Representative, for the question. A couple of things. I think that first, the guarantee that's being provided, as amended, the bill is simply nonprofits, right? So it is already a nonprofit organization that is providing a guarantee and certifying that the funds are available. So this is already an entity that is a 501c3 or other nonprofit organization that presumably has a fair amount of staff that is paying attention to resources and would not lightly guarantee funds. I think that the recourse is that it is a legally enforceable guarantee provided by an entity to provide the funds. I would say that if this is a concern that would keep the bill from moving forward, we'd be happy to talk to Chair Howard and others about ways to address that concern to make sure that it is meaningful and impactful and we're allowed to open up this door to private resources, because I do think it is, there are possibly mechanisms you could use through the court if there are concerns along that, and I'd be happy to talk to you or your staff about that.
And we are moving this bill to judiciary, where that would be a relevant topic in the committee. Representative Mamani Hiltzley.
Thank you so much, Chair. For me, I look at this from a trust perspective. Let me just ask this committee, especially my good friends and colleagues on the other side of the aisle, how many of us go around when you leave your house, carry your passport, right? Well, I do. I have to carry my passport everywhere I go. And that's because I don't trust this government exactly, right, to do the right thing. I have to carry it because if I sit here and tell this government that, hey, I'm a U.S. citizen, that I will not be trusted and something might happen, right? So for me, coming back to this bill, my community is rooted in trust. But unfortunately, there is no trust in local government, in these government agencies that are currently established in this bill, right? So the expansion to the nonprofit organizations is key to making sure that folks who don't have trust in these systems already that have shown time and time again that we don't care about you, allows these individuals to go to those bodies, nonprofit organizations that have created a track record in their communities and trusted partners to get this support. So for me, this is why I'm really appreciative of this bill. It makes it inclusive. It makes it possible for many of us, especially folks who are coming from my community, to be able to get the support that they need. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Kozlowski.
Obviously, what I'm going to say is support, but on the premise that this is one a good bill and we should just already have this be law, that a landlord can be made whole by any means necessary, and that renters can have the assurance that they're going to be able to stay in their homes with the backing of multiple different types of financial supports. But I want to put a fine point on it that what we just told Minnesotans in the previous bill that I brought forward that would help one part of this, which is the financial backing to stay in your home, we told you you're on your own. And so this is what Minnesotans are doing on their own, scraping together pennies, scraping together as many dollars as they can to stay in their house, to keep their neighbors afloat for another month. And so this is the bare minimum, the least that we can do right now as a state, is to pass this bill forward and move it along so that we can get the help in any means necessary.
Co-Chair Igo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I would thank the bill author, but I'll thank the committee for kind of bringing this together. This is a really interesting proposal, this bill. And I wouldn't say I'm necessarily opposed to it, but I have a lot of the same questions that I think we kind of heard from testimony. You know, I know we're striking one word, but that one word is the word government. So when you strike the word government from statute, it brings with it a lot of questions and a lot of uncertainty. And I think if we are going to move forward on something like this, we need to make sure we vet that out properly, because as we move things forward, statute can have lasting effects, as we heard from some of our members on our community or our committee here. And I did want to raise like one thing. Like, we heard today that we're already seeing millions of dollars already find the way to help people through collaboration in our communities, and that's one of the things that makes Minnesota great. So that also gives me pause to know that we are in a place where we should take the extra couple days and make sure we get this bill right before we move it on. So I think that is another critical component to this, especially as we look into what it could mean, and this is where defining government really becomes important, because we need to make sure we witness that we don't have the wrong groups giving out guarantees that turn into a legal problem and pack our courts. I think that's something that we can all agree on. We don't want someone to step in and start taking advantage of people who are in need. So I think we're close, and if we can find language to clean that up, I think we're in a good place. But right now, I can't vote yes on this bill.
I'll just make a quick, brief comment and just echo what Representative Kozlowski mentioned, which is if we're not going to be providing state-level assistance, which we absolutely should, then we absolutely should be finding ways to stretch what our communities are doing, and would reiterate that the community groups that are stepping up, these are, you know, faith-based organizations. The group in my community in Richfield is a well-run nonprofit, you know, and as the testifier mentioned, you know, this is a legally binding document. I do appreciate that there might be some ability to continue having a conversation on it, and we will certainly do so. I think it's important, the urgency, what Minnesotans are facing, we should take a vote on it. We absolutely will, and we'll keep pressing, keep pushing, because the crisis before us demands it. And so with that, I will renew the motion that this bill be passed as amended and re-refer to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee, and I'll ask our CLA to take the roll.
Co-Chair Howard?
Aye.
Howard, aye. Co-Chair Igo?
No.
Igo, no. Vice Co-Chair Kozlowski?
Aye.
Kozlowski, aye. Vice Co-Chair Dotseff?
No.
Dotseff, no. Representative Buck?
Aye.
Buck, aye. Representative Hussein?
Aye.
Hussein, aye. Representative Johnson?
Nay.
Johnson, nay. Representative Meckland?
No.
Meckland, nay. Representative Momani Hiltzley?
Aye.
Momani Hiltzley, aye. Representative Myers?
Nay.
Myers, nay. Representative Nash?
No.
Nash, nay. Representative Norris?
Aye.
Norris, aye. Representative Rayrar?
Aye.
Rayrar, aye. Representative Scraba?
No.
Scraba, no.
The ayes are at 7, the nays are at 7, so the motion does not prevail. Members, we have just about 9 minutes left, and we could maybe go a little bit longer. We do have folks that are here to testify. So my recommendation will be that Representative Vigbaje presents her bill and we try to get to testifiers, but that we pick up this member discussion so members have time to discuss the bill the next time I have the gavel. So Representative Vigbaje, you just can't quit us in housing, which I appreciate.
I'm here for life.
Since you're no longer a member of the committee, I will move that your bill be brought in front of us and we refer to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. And I'll also move your A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe it?
Yes, thank you, Chair Howard. The A1 amendment makes sure that 30 days is actually throughout all of the sections where 14 days appears. And then it also includes an ability for a judge to stay a writ of recovery for no longer than 15 days in the event that it would be a hardship for a renter to move out. And then it also, that section also just allows a renter one last chance to redeem, to make things right with the landlord, especially in a non-payment of rent case. So that is what the amendment does.
Thank you. Is there any discussion on the author's amendment? Not all those in favor, say aye. Aye. Opposed? The A1 is adopted, and the bill is in the shape the author desires. Representative Vajre, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Thank you, Chair Igo and committee members. I'll try to move through this as quickly as I can. House File 3424 expands the eviction notice across the state to 30 days from its current 14-day notice standard. The main reason for this is that we continue to see that people need time to find and receive support for rental assistance. As you know, as we've heard from many members and testifiers today, this need is particularly acute after the ICE incursion, where we saw a number of workers from the metro area to small towns lose hours at work or not go to work at all for fear of detention by federal agents. Without those breadwinners, families need the ability to find all available resources to help with non-payment of rent. This bill also acknowledges the reality that we're in now and the fact that rental assistance funds actually take time to be received by that person. In my own community, we've raised funds to help families connected to North High School, and while we've had people step up, the need continues to outpace what we're able to raise. And communities also will not necessarily be fast enough to provide that rental assistance within the 14 days that we currently have. And so that additional time can ensure that renters in the communities or organizations that they rely on can get those funds on time. 30-day notice provides the tenants the opportunity to find that in a more reasonable time frame. And, of course, the final benefit goes to the landlord's bottom line. So this helps make landlords whole, this helps keep our community stabilized, and it helps prevent eviction in many, many cases. And so with that, I'll turn to the testifiers that we have and then do questions at another date.
Thank you, Representative. First testifier, we have Michael Bartos, janitor, SEIU 26. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and members. My name is Mike Bartos. I'm a janitor, a renter, and a proud member of SEIU Local 26. I'm here because Minnesota needs rational, just housing policies that meet this moment. Operation Metro Surge created fear and instability in our communities. We saw people targeted by federal agents, including my brother-in-law. My coworkers are hardworking people. We clean buildings, keep workplaces safe, and help this state function every single day. We want what everyone wants. We want to work hard. We want to be able to pay our rent and provide for our families. But when workers are detained or living in constant fear, housing stability disappears overnight. One of my union brothers, who has legal work authorization, stopped working two jobs so someone would always be home in case he or his wife was taken. That meant his wife had to carry the full burden of rent. One of my union sisters had her husband taken. She still had to show up to work every day to keep paying rent, all while living with the fear that she could be next, even with work authorization. When income is suddenly cut, when families are forced to reduce hours, when breadwinners are detained, the rent doesn't stop, but the paychecks do. That's why our union supports extending the pre-eviction notice timeline so families have time to stabilize. We support rental assistance to keep working people housed, and we support even a temporary eviction moratorium so families are not pushed into homelessness because of federal actions they did not cause. These are practical, humane steps. We all want the same thing. We want to be able to go to work, pay our rent, and come home safely to our families. And I believe that Minnesota can meet this moment. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Ann Smetak, again, with Director and Senior Counsel of the Housing Justice Center, and after that will be Cecil Smith. Welcome back. Keeping on your toes today.
Thank you, Chair Howard and Chair Igo. I will be brief since you've heard from me quite a bit today. I'm Ann Smetak with the Housing Justice Center. The Housing Justice Center strongly supports House File 3424 that would provide for a 30-day notice period before a landlord can terminate a tenancy for non-payment of rent. Evictions for non-payment of rent harm tenant households and destabilize rental housing properties. Providing a 30-day notice period would provide additional time for tenants to access rental assistance resources or otherwise address an economic shortfall so that funds can be provided to landlords to address any arrears and to stabilize the property. It would provide a meaningful timeline for landlords and tenants to resolve misunderstandings regarding fees or arrears in person, as opposed to having to resolve that in court, as too often happens. Adopting House File 3424 would provide continued stability for tenant households and the rental housing market, and we encourage this committee to move forward on this important bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Smith, welcome back.
Thank you, Chair Howard, Chair Igo, members of the committee. Again, Cecil Smith with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. House File 3424, as amended before you, does more harm than good, both in the short term and in the long term. We are firmly opposed. Housing providers have no margin left to once again absorb the costs through delays of well-intentioned but needless government intervention. We have existing resources and protections in place to help renters who are in financial distress. I urge you to focus your efforts on making the process more efficient for renters and housing providers rather than extending timelines. Thank you.
And next we have Michael Dahl, Public Policy Director at Homeline. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to testify in favor of House File 3424. My name is Michael Dahl, and I am the Public Policy Director at Homeline. We provide free legal, organizing, education, and advocacy services to tenants across Minnesota. Since 1992, we've advised more than 355,000 renter households, including a record 20,241 new contacts in 2025. While my focus today is on the increase of pre-eviction notice from 14 to 30 days, I should note that Homeline also supports emergency rental assistance, getting to those in need as soon as possible, and the pledge of third-party assistance to help pay for rent and avoid eviction. Regarding the pre-eviction notice, in light of Operation Metro Surge, we believe 30 days is the minimum amount of time that's needed to address the current crisis. And we think it's sound policy, crisis or not. First, 30-day pre-eviction notices are already in place for many renters. Brooklyn Center, Minneapolis, St. Louis Park, and soon St. Paul will have adopted or be adopting this policy. Second, there have been no legal challenges to these local provisions. Third, additional time provides critical cushion. 30 days provides tenants the opportunity to receive tax refunds, seek help from family or friends, access emergency assistance, or, we hope, secure emergency rental assistance. That time can mean the difference between displacement and stability while ensuring landlords ultimately receive the rent owed. Regarding the current crisis, our goal is to keep households stably housed. We can only do that by ensuring the families have the time and resources to catch up on rent. Many remained in their homes because they feared leaving due to federal detention. The legislature can provide both the time and financial resources to deal with this crisis. Homeline urges you to pass low barrier and emergency rental assistance as soon as possible so renters can pay what they owe. Minnesotans have stepped up to the support of their neighbors, and now it's time for state government to step up to keep impacted households stably housed for the long term. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Next, we have Rye Galbraith with the C-Tool Action Fund. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, members of the committee. My name is Rye Galbraith, and up until very recently, I worked in a prominent, award-winning restaurant in downtown Minneapolis. It is one that many would think is doing well, but that is not the case. No one in our industry is doing well, and we are going to be in recovery mode for quite some time. I was laid off from my restaurant last week explicitly due to the economic toll of Operation Metro Surge. Even before my layoff, around half of my shifts have been canceled due to lack of customers for the previous several weeks. We have had days where we closed early because there were not enough customers to remain open. Our industry is one that is equipped to handle economic downturns, particularly in this month. But the harm caused by Operation Metro Surge is something else entirely. Most of us are struggling to make ends meet, and this is particularly the case when it comes to rental assistance. The point I want to drive home is that this federal occupation has been an untenable economic stressor on all workers, regardless of our immigration status. Thousands of us are unable to work, and thousands more of us are facing eviction, and despite the ways that we are able to assist one another via mutual aid, there is simply not enough resources to support everyone in our community. Having experienced housing insecurity in my own life, I am very aware that you cannot heal nor recover from these crises when struggling to meet your most basic needs. We need immediate policy action in order to avoid an eviction crisis in the coming months. The bills being brought forward today are a strong step towards a just recovery from this unjust occupation, a recovery that would center vulnerable community members who are shouldering an outsized share of this long-term damage. Emergency rental assistance is as quickly as possible is critically important. It is going to take time for people to be able to access any assistance, regardless of its source. So I urge all of you to support the bill extending the eviction notification timeline to 30 days. We are less than 2 weeks away from March 1st when rent is due and another wave of people will face eviction. You can help ensure that people stay in their homes as we all navigate the healing from this collective trauma. I'd like to thank the bill authors for bringing this forward, and I call upon the members of this community to support this life-saving action today.
Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
That concludes our member testimony, and so we'll plan to hear this bill in committee next Wednesday when we have the gavel. The last thing I'll say is one feature of the last 2 months is that no matter what ICE has thrown at Minnesotans, they just keep coming back in support of their neighbors. And despite the outcome of these votes today, so too will House Democrats as we fight to stand with Minnesotans and our neighbors. And with that, we're adjourned.